We're going to get started. Gary's a little bit further away, so we'll get going and take it from there.
Good afternoon.
Hey.
It is my pleasure to start us off in talking about a Title III grant that we received in 2019. Now, why are we talking about that now? We are still bursting with pride that we got this thing back in 2019. Right now, we feel like we're kind of awash in dollars for different things, but back in 2019, that was not the case in the grants world anyway. Title III is a federal grant that was created in statute 1965. It's only given out every other year. Hundreds of institutions apply for it. They give out 40 to 60 every other year. And so we had tried before, and we had not gotten it. And this was a very big deal when we applied and put it out. Unlike a lot of grants, it allows a lot of creativity in the Strengthening Institutions grant. And so what we would like to do today is, between Dr. Buccino and myself, we want to introduce the project manager for this very large grant, Catherine Fulco. And Kat is going to tell you a little bit about what we've accomplished in the 3 years since we had the grant. It's a five-year grant, and we're beginning the fourth year now. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Kat.
And Amy,
we'll help her out occasionally.
Amy, can you tell, how much was that grant again?
$2.1 million.
Okay, well, hello. So I'm Catherine Fulco, Kat. So Title III, it asks colleges to find their weak spots and to create a plan that strengthens the entire institution. We have called our grant Learner Engagement, Navigation, and Support, or LENS, because it looks at the success of our students from top to bottom. We used the mindset logic model to develop all of our strategies of improving graduation and retention. The initiatives developed aren't just a wish list items of cool things or stuff that we wanted to upgrade. It is a true evaluation of where we wanted to grow and where we needed to grow. So the Daytona State LEND grant was awarded in 2019 for $2.1 million. And we are very excited about the accomplishments that we've had in just over 3 years. I know she just left you, but Dr. Locklear is going to start us off with strategy one. I was going to have some of my team leads here. They're away at a conference.
They're at the ASC
yes,
conference.
But
so you get me and Eric. Sorry.
That's okay.
Okay, so there were three strategies in this grant. The first one was about professional development and marketing, but it was focused on enriching our communication with students and with our community in a more reflective and effective way. So there are two major parts of this initiative, professional development in inclusive excellence and a new website, which you all have seen, but we're going to show you a little bit of the before and after. For the professional development in inclusive excellence, we rolled out a pretty rigorous training to all the employees at the college. We aimed for everyone at the college to take it, 887 employees, and 100% of them did. After that, we created a faculty development program. It's called the Faculty Development Program for Inclusive Excellence. And it does sort of sound like the academic side of the house named these things, which we did. So it's rather lengthy and has an acronym and all that. But we brought in faculty who, under the grant, were able to be paid to develop programs to teach other faculty how to be more inclusive in their classrooms, how to look at their lessons, how to be more broadly appealing to students. And so we've had, up until now, 25 faculty that have gone through this program of inclusive excellence, which is just based on pedagogy, how you present things that gets to all the different types of learners and different types of students that we have. We have six that are going through this fall. The other thing we did was bring in national level expert speakers. You know, we have the Limeron Entrepreneurial Speaker Series, which is wonderful, and we have an Entrepreneurial Mindset Initiative Speaker Series, which is wonderful. This was focused specifically on faculty. You may not know some of these names, but in the world of pedagogy, they're huge. Dr. Linda Garcia, the director of the Center for Community College and Student Engagement, came in spring 2021 for spring planning. Dr. Terrell Strayhorn from Illinois State University did staff education days in 2021. It was his idea to use the phrase, "You belong here," as a tagline, which became a slogan you'll see all over campus and in our marketing materials. Dr. Jamil Johnson, University of South Carolina, came in the spring of 22. He talked about the critical role of faculty and staff in supporting student success. And Dr. Peter Felton from Elon University led a discussion on relationship-rich education at the Academic Excellence Symposium in 2022. So those are just some of the things I will go on for another 2 years that we have done to make these opportunities available for faculty. That's going to tell you about the website.
So to reinforce the extensive efforts of professional development, the second half of Strategy 1 focuses on positive, intentional messaging in the communications that we have with students, specifically focused on the website. I hope you had the opportunity to experience our new website. That launched September of 2021. So let's take a little step back in time so we can compare some old site pages to the new ones. So the site's updated homepage is streamlined with more open space, whose primary objective it is to just give key information about school statistics, news, and events, and to entice users to engage.
The top one was the old one.
Correct.
And the bottom one is the new one.
So that will, order will repeat. So the pages within are inviting, and they encourage our users to easily navigate deeper and to explore more. And we focused on intuitive navigation titles and combined content to put the information of one subject in on one particular page. So our data from Google Analytics on this new site are incredibly encouraging. It shows that users are staying on the site much longer and they're exploring further than our old site. For example, the average bounce rate, which would mean that someone went onto the site, did nothing, and then just left, it has reduced from 70% on the old site down to 30 for this new site. The optimal range is between 26 and 40, so we're right where we should be. Also, while reviewing our first year of analytics, we found that the brand new addition to the site, which is this program Finder, which easily allows our students and users to explore based off of criteria, like you can see here, program type and different departments, that this is now our second most popular page right below the actual DSC homepage. So up and coming for the new year, we plan on reviewing all of our program pages so we can maximize the popularity of this program finder. So now I'm going to have Mr. Aquino come up.
I'll tell you one thing about website, you know, and Randy, I'm sure you've done it in your, you know, your institutions and being 32 years doing this now. These are big undertakings. Our websites at colleges and universities are They're large to begin with, and then they grow, and they grow, and they grow, and they become entangled in some way. So, you know, I've been through a few of these complete rehauls and redos, and it's a big undertaking. And I think the newer one's cleaner, and as Kat mentioned, just so much more intuitive.
To Tom's point, when we uncovered and started to look at the old website and what we're going to bring over to the new one, I just asked Kat, we had over 7,000 pages. Some of them were not active, some of them were there, we didn't clean them up, but through this opportunity, we put it down to like under 2,000 pages right now. And just remember, I mean, you all know, you business owners, leaders, you know, every single piece of information is a page on there. So to be able to cut it down that much, it took a huge effort from the entire college community to say, I know all your information is important, what's not as important? And we had to go through and really start to say, nobody's visited this page in 3 years. Do you really need it? Can we put it someplace else? Can we embed it into other things, you know? So we took a very data-driven and very intentional approach throughout this whole project. And, you know, Kat was instrumental, and she can do everything with the website as well. But, I mean, it was just, as to Tom's point, it was a massive undertaking to bring it down to that much. So And in addition to that, you know, moved on to strategy two. And so the focus of strategy two is academic advising, you know, and how can we connect better with our students, especially in that sense of mattering and belonging. When I've got my first job at a community college, you know, 10 plus years ago, I had a conversation with the team. I was like, you know what, I have a feeling community colleges are going to go less transactional, more where we have to be intentional. And when I came to Daytona State, we were doing that. And then we kept asking ourselves, how can we be more intentional with our students? How can we help our students and be with them and help them know that they matter and reach out to them? And that was the whole focus of this second strategy. So Title III allowed us, I'm not even touching the slides because it's just one slide, so more pages than slides to talk through. But we wanted to focus on working with our specific populations of students that would benefit greatly from having a more one-on-one approach with our academic advisors and some other ideas that we had. So one of the groups that we identified that would benefit from additional support are our first-year AA degree-seeking students. It began by trying to have assigned advisors for all students, but then we shifted to a model that we're seeing across higher education with regard to academic coaches. So we started to hire academic coaches here, and the point of an academic coach is kind of like your, almost like your concierge or your person who's going to walk you through from your application all the way through enrollment, helping you identify barriers, helping you to make sure you enroll in classes, helping to keep track of you all sorts of the way. So we've been able to help do that. We started students in our FAME program, and I'll tell you more about that in a minute. I know we're very comfortable with the FAME program, but I still want to go over it anyway. We wanted to focus on our fully online students. You know, students who are online, they have the opportunity to not be as connected with the institution, but we want to engage with them. They are our Daytona State students, and we want them to be proud of that. We want them to feel that pride there, too. And the other piece we wanted to focus on is how do we ensure that as they're sitting in classes, they're thinking about that step after Daytona State. What's their career? How do they understand what career exploration even looks like? So we integrated career planning and financial literacy in our SLS, our, you know, Managing Your Success class, the intro class all students have to take, which is required of all AA students, to help them start thinking about what's gonna life gonna be like, what's the long game, what's my long strategy? So we've done that. Title III also paved the way for us to develop Florida's first FAME chapter. And we know Trustee Doherty was a wonderful advocate for that, and you approved it, and it's an amazing opportunity. As a reminder, FAME stands for the Federation of Advanced Manufacturing Education, provides students with an opportunity for work-based learning and to have pretty much take classes and work at a local manufacturing company. And they sponsor the students and hopefully secure full-time employment. Our first cohort began in 2021 and had 100% placement rate upon graduation. And that's that picture right there is our first FAME chapter, where they're actually showcasing a project they built on site and how to streamline operations for at a sponsoring company. Our second cohort began this semester, and we have a total of 10 students. End of semester presentations for both cohorts will take place on December 16th at 10 a.m. at the ATC in room 109. If anybody wants to attend, please come. These students are amazing. They're so prideful in the work that they do, and they love to have a crowd and love to show off their great stuff. So, now, lastly, one of the great things I liked about when I came here and something we put into place a long time ago was we make sure when students enroll in classes under their academic program that they can only take classes for their – they can only take their academic requirements. Can't, you know, have to live within their academic requirements as they're completing their education. However, we purchased two things, and Kat's going to walk through it, and this is really cool, but I'm going to give you a little snippet. This past summer, we launched two new products to help improve the students' plan, to help them plan out their pathways. The first one is Degree Planner. We'll be walking through a demo in a little bit, but essentially what it does is allow students to enter a timeline for how long they want to complete their education, and then they can help chart their course from there. And so they know what classes they would take in a particular semester from now until the end of their degree. If they end up, you know, for some reason changing, dropping a class, a life, something happens, or something gets, it can automatically adjust their plan for them. Typically, this was happening manually when a student came in, sat down with an academic advisor, and that each semester they would talk about what's your plan, what's your next set of classes. So, as you'll see when we walk through the demo, it's really slick. It's really great, and it makes the time with the advisor and the student and the academic coach and the student much more efficient. And then the second piece she'll be talking about is our schedule builder. And this is a tool that helps that I would love to have in my day-to-day, where you just say, what do you have going on? And it gives you all the options for the classes you need to take and, you know, what times there are. So you could actually even, again, I don't want to steal Cat's thunder too much, but you could actually block out what you can't do, and it'll help adjust your schedule accordingly. So I'm going to leave it there. I know Kat's going to jump into that and a couple other things, but these changes really have empowered our students to help plan their education, see what that end goal is, and help them understand that it's achievable and they can do that and we can help them get there, all with a sense couched under the umbrella that they belong and that they matter.
The last strategy is strategy 3, and this focused on success in online classes. One thing we did was expand the virtual hours in the Writing Center beyond traditional 8 to 5. So students could log on and get a real person after 5 o'clock, when the Writing Center is physically closed, and talk to the person and walk through whatever they needed. Students loved it a whole lot, especially during COVID, which is sort of, you got to remember, we're implementing this thing during COVID as well. So some of these ideas kind of were born of both COVID and Title III. But what we were thrilled to see is that when we embed a virtual Writing Center person in a class, so you've got a course shell for every class, whether it's face-to-face or online, and up in the corner you'll see a Writing Center person that's available for you. So you click on and get help in real time. We saw a 14% increase in success taking the Gateway English courses when they had an embedded Writing Center person in the class. So we know that's something that truly works. The online success seminar we're going to tell you a little more about. This was a sort of a course developed for students to take before they get in their first online class. Curriculum developers, instructional designers, and online retention advisor and coordinator all contributed to developing the OSS, as we call it. The Smarter Measure readiness assessment was also part of that. It's a test every student takes before they register that tells the advisor how well suited they are to online learning. So they take it, they get a score, the advisor sits down with them and starts with, and they say, oh, yeah, I want all online. And the advisor can start with, but your scores here are showing that is probably not the best idea. For instance, you have told us you do not have a computer and things like that. But it measures all sorts of different, like your reading levels and your comprehension, your ability to transfer information on the screen. It's pretty in-depth.
The thing important about that is because the myth out there, sometimes students think an online class is going to be easier. And they're not, you know, either they're not computer savvy enough, or they're even just things like reading levels. And if you're not in front of a teacher who can be there at the minute you're having a problem and you're online, you're more likely to fail. So this assessment really helps them, you know, gauge that. And it's not that they can never take online, but it's like, maybe let's get a couple classes under your belt first, and or hybrid, do hybrid courses first. And so this has been a good assessment because it's too easy to just, let me just take it online. Especially with the pandemic, I think that even exacerbated the ease of just, I'll take it online, and whether they're really ready for it or not. And they don't think that through until it's too late.
And we know there's a gap in success in online versus face-to-face, especially for gateway courses. You start the first semester off by failing a course, your chances of ever coming back go way down. And so we want them to have that great first semester and guide them into the type of class they're going to be successful in from the very first semester. Honor Lock is something else we purchased with Title III money. That is a system of virtual proctoring for tests, so online tests. It keeps students not cheating. Yeah, honorable, yeah. Right. And the faculty really have really adopted that, and it's been very successful. H5P is an HTML-based platform for content creation. It lets the faculty create some really engaging video and visual effects in their courses that help teach concepts like science. It's used it a lot. It's been a really helpful tool. This online success course, this is what it looks like when you go in and you've got your little avatar there who's going to lead you through it. We're going to try to show you a demonstration, but one thing I want to point out is that students that take this first have a 19 percentage point higher rate of success in an online class than those that don't do this first, and then a 28% higher level of persistence to the next semester. So we know this is a powerful tool. We are working towards making this a mandatory requirement. It doesn't cost the students anything, but what we've learned out of this and what we are going to propose is that this fully online 3-hour seminar becomes part of the onboarding at Daytona State, because you cannot argue with these numbers. This helps tremendously. Okay, so Tracy, can you start this, Kat, thank you. We're going to see if this will work for us. And you can see what the students experience. Oh, no sound. Well, let's let it play for just a second anyway. So this is a faculty member. She's a professor of English, Dr. Lipsy. She was in the UCF cohort that just got their EDDs through Daytona State. She's a wonderful English teacher. So the video is real people talking to the students. And leading them through, you know, how they're going to be successful in the course shell and how to navigate. So this is walking through what you'll do when you're in the seminar, the outcomes that you'll have. Uh-oh. Okay, I'll turn it back over to you.
Okay. That's okay. Mm-hmm. We're good right there. So thank you, Dr. Locklear and Dr. DeQuino. So back to me. So now that you've seen a lot of what we've done in our multiple strategy, you might be wondering how we're doing. So I have a couple of slides and won't go into too much depth with you, but on the how we're being measured and how we're reporting back to the Department of Education. So on these slides, the lighter color was the goal that was set, and the darker is how we've done each year. As you can see, we've had some really great success in retention and student sense of belongingness, the first and the last one here. We did have some early issues with tracking some of these points, and implementing during COVID has been an interesting challenge, but we are so happy with the progress that we have on those first and last points. And then, though the pandemic has also impacted our recent graduation rates, students that are currently enrolled are enrolling in more credit hours and withdrawing from fewer critical gateway courses. The scheduling software was originally supposed to be implemented much earlier in the grant timeline. Thank you, COVID. We had some hiccups in getting that done, but we have launched. So we just launched at the end of June of this year, and already 48% of our students utilized it this fall. So, as mentioned earlier, we're going to do a walkthrough of this new scheduling software. You'll get to see how Schedule Builder uses personalized filters to reduce the time it takes to select courses by displaying only the option that fits within a student's preference for their classes. And within Degree Planner, all college credit and CTE degrees, so over 150 degrees, have been planned from here at Daytona State, and these have been reviewed with the academic departments, so we're recommending the preferred sequence and also priority of the courses. So afterwards, this gives us valuable analytics, which are available to help us balance course fill rates, to see when students are reporting that they're not available to take courses, to monitor protected graduation, and to view various warnings. The data is going to be used to strategically plan our class offerings, so we're going to be able to reduce the number of low-enrolled sections, decrease the number of credits that they take over that they needed for graduation, and increase the number of students who are enrolled full-time each semester.
You know, on that point, if you can imagine, as a school that gets larger and larger, to predict how many English 2 sections we need and how many Physics 2, you know, this will tell us exactly on our own data what those students are ready to take next. So when we build our schedule, we just get so much more efficient, as Kat mentioned, you know, and you don't have those, we put a class out there, now we have 15 kids in it. We really didn't need to run that section because you can average it out in the other one. So it's you know, a little in the weeds, but for us, it makes us more efficient in what we offer and when to offer it.
Mm-hmm.
Which takes a little bit of the, preference out of maybe the faculty member who, I really like teaching at 10, but the kids want it at 8.
Yeah.
Not that you have that problem, man.
All right, so we're going to see it in action. Freddie Falcon is a student at Daytona State College in our Engineering Technology AS degree. We're going to follow along with Freddie as he plans out his degree from start to finish and registers for classes next semester. From Falcon Self-Service Student Portal, Freddie is going to navigate to the enrollment menu. From the enrollment menu, Freddie's going to go down to Degree Planner. All classes for his engineering technology program automatically populate onto the Degree Planner dashboard. But Freddie still needs to pick a specialization, which he can do easily by clicking on Select Option. So he's already talked to his academic advisor during his new student advising appointment, and he knows he wants to select the electronics option. Back on the dashboard, he notices his list of courses for spring 23 has changed. And when Freddie scrolls down, he sees the electives for the electronic specialization automatically populated into his course list. The last thing Freddie needs to do before moving on is to make sure that no classes are planned for this summer because he's going to be working out of state. So to remove these classes, Freddie clicks on this pencil icon, changes his max units to 0, and then clicks Save. Degree Planner removed all the courses from summer 23 and resequenced his classes to accommodate the change. And when he scrolls down to the bottom, he can easily see what semester he should finish and when he can graduate. Since Freddie's ready to register, he clicks on the Schedule Builder button from the enrollment menu. Schedule Builder then automatically populates all of the courses that were planned in spring 23 in Degree Planner. But he's not ready to pick a schedule yet. He works in the evenings and doesn't want to take classes at night, so he clicks on unavailable times, types a label of work, and then goes to time range. He sets the time from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. And from the days drop down, he clicks Monday through Friday. He also knows he only wants to take classes on certain campuses, so from the campus drop-down, he checks ATC, Daytona Beach, and online. He looks at the instruction mode option, but since he's fine with taking classes in any modality, he leaves that blank. Just one more filter to add. Freddie's friend took English 1101 with Jessica Kester last semester and was told she was a great instructor. So he only wants to see schedule options that has that teacher. So from the ENC 1101 line, he clicks on Select Sections. And from the instructor dropdown, he selects Jessica Kester. He clicks on OK to apply these filters, and he's brought back to the Schedule Builder dashboard. With all those filters set, he's ready to build his schedule. So with all those schedules, all those filters put into place, and the numerous course options and combinations that are available, he now sees that it's narrowed down quite a bit. And there are only 32 schedule combinations to choose from.
Only 30.
I know, it sounds like only 32, but he had 5 classes, and every combination of those classes and every modality he would have had to handpick one by one by one previously. So when he scrolls down, he can see that his work schedule is automatically blocked off. Freddie wants to be on campus as often as possible, so he clicks on the sort type, and he changes that to most days. Now he can see only one class is online, and he sees that he can be on campus Monday through Thursday. But there's kind of a big gap between the math class and the others, so he clicks on the next button to find one that works.
I'm ready to enroll.
Right? You're almost there. So that's better. But he does want to know who's teaching that college algebra class. So he clicks on that course card to get more details about the class. He likes that class time and has heard good things about the instructor, so he decides to pin that course to his schedule. So now there's only two options available, but this one meets all of his needs, so he decides to select this version. He's going to confirm all those sections one more time and click on the enroll button, and success. He is registered for all of his classes. From the schedule navigation menu, he can confirm the spring 23 schedule has indeed been scheduled. And in the future, we will be able to, from this screen, have walking directions. So this is where students will be able to go for walking directions so they can figure out where to get to on campus without stopping random people to ask where a certain building is located.
This alone saved several miles. When I registered running from the gym to my advisor's office, back to the gym when I found out, back to the advisor when I found out the course was full, back to the gym.
Absolutely. So just a small little preview. As mentioned, analytics are now available, so we can have a little more thoughtful, be a little more thoughtful with our course offerings. We'll know when students are saying they're unavailable. 18 students are saying they're not available. Fridays at 3. And we can, as Dr. Labasso pointed out, how many students are projected to need a course in the future. So this is comparing how many seats are going to be needed next fall for these particular courses. And here we can see that 46 students have this EET course planned, and we only have 30 scheduled. So we're in a deficit of 16. So instead of having to rush and hurry up and create a new section, when the first one fills, we'll already be able to have that section ready for them. So thank you for letting me be here so I can tell you more about the Lens Grant. Do you have any questions for me?
I do. So you talked about, so it's an accountability question. So you talked about reporting to the Department of Education.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, clearly we sit here and you can see the success. How does the Department of Education review and account for your success? Is there an acknowledgement? Is it just simply funding the effort? What happens there?
Yes, we have an annual report that we have to submit every year, and all of the goals that I showed you earlier, we have to report on those every time. So they don't necessarily ask for backup, but we do have to have it because at any time they can tap us on the shoulder to audit us, and then we have to come up with all that information. So we are every year reporting to them.
Is there any correlation to that level of success to the possibility of securing more grants? Same way.
It's definitely evidence we can use in applying for other grants that we have seen an increase based on these actions. I don't really base this on something really concrete, but my feeling was once you get a grant like this, others start coming to you. And they're so hard to get that I remember at the CIA meeting or Council on Instructional Affairs meeting, I was doing like a little welcome. It was in Daytona, and I said, and Daytona State just got a Title III grant. And the whole room started clapping, all these Amys from across the state, because they were like, we tried last year. And, you know, but so it builds your reputation as being able to manage this kind of big level change. So I do think it has a trickle effect to others. A successful Title III grant can help you with a future Title III application. I have no doubt that you earn a reputation for having achieved good results.
I think the last Title III grant we received was 2001.
Yeah, that's about
thing that, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, so with these large grants like this, their experience points, everything with the federal system is based on points. Oftentimes, you'll be within a quarter of a point above perfection sometimes. We might get, if 100 is the score, we may get 104.5 because things go above based on, but we could miss it by a quarter of a point. So our scores are always way above or right at the very top. Getting a grant will give you an additional half.
I would also just say applaud the use of the technology. It's one thing to have the technology available, but when you make it a step-by-step process and one that, you know, that most people, having usable technology is the key, not just having technology, but usable technology, and your rate, your success rate obviously indicates that the technology is usable. And I would say to you, your opening comments about requiring it as the 3 hours, I think you said it is, as a part of the onboarding, I would totally support that. Totally. I think that's the right idea.
It is good, and you're exactly right. It's nice to, bells and whistles are nice, only if you use them.
One thing that Kat did in all this implementation is test it with students. Okay. She would bring focus groups of students in and show them the technology and say, does this make sense to you? Would you use this? And we built that into, you know, developing this stuff.
One other comment, Tom. I continue to applaud the workshop process, by the way. I think this is a good thing for us. It just keeps expanding the board members' knowledge of what's going on, and so I applaud the process and thank you.
You know, and I think sometimes there's things, you know, obviously there's things you all do in private industry that we can learn from, and once in a while we have some technologies that in your own workplace, especially the guy to my right here, might see and go, hey, are we doing this at the Riddle, or, you know, and vice versa, so it's good stuff, but, you know, thanks, appreciate that.
Quick question on that. I noticed that the time to degree metric was the one metric that looked like it had gone down each year. Is part of that COVID related, you think? Like, if you compared that to other colleges in the college system, would it be?
Yeah. So the time to degree, the one that you looked at it tracking down, we're counting 150%. That's what we're tracking. So that first cohort was not even our cohort. That was pre-Title III, and that was, they weren't affected by COVID at all. And then that first cohort felt it slightly after they started. And yes, it has tracked down a bit, but we are.
Your hope is that a rebound.
Definitely hoping to see it start tracking up, especially now that Schedule Builder is out there. We really felt that that's the one that was gonna be our biggest game changer as far as helping students figure that out. I didn't point it out in there, but with that, degree planner, it automatically expects the student to be full-time. So it's just automatically going to be scheduling 15 credit hours per semester in fall and spring. So we're encouraging that full-time enrollment. They can move it down if they need to, but it will almost look like I don't have any other choice. And hopefully they'll just take our friendly suggestion and get to graduation.
The interesting part about that, especially when we opened up the degree planner and the schedule itself, we just kind of just unlocked it so students could find it. And that was, you know, I mean.
We did a soft launch where we just didn't tell anybody about it. Just there it is. And advising started getting things like, I went to Schedule Builder or I went to Degree Planner. It told me that I was going to be graduating.
Within hours. Within hours of us just kind of softly releasing it.
It felt like a canned response. Like,
yeah,
someone was just,
it was
there.
Amazing.
So it's good. And we've had very positive results. And the academic side of the house has embraced it because they love that they don't have to sit with each, that it's just out there for everyone.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the hope is we can increase the time to degree, you know, with this.
You had a lot of them where you had really good data on not just the indirect effect, but like the, you know, the students did better if they were in the class that had a link to the What about the inclusivity training for the? Is there a direct metric there in terms of after they take it, you know, the student satisfaction surveys go up or?
We've run our sense. We've only run the sense survey once. We hadn't done it before, so we will be running the sense survey again next year. And because we're doing it alternating years, we did add that question within our own internal one with our external evaluator, and it has been tracking upward since we've done that.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of external evaluators, another part of this grant is that you have to have one, and so we have a company as part of the grant that comes in and they come to campus and they interview students and they ask them all these things, so they gather that information as well and give us feedback about the students' feelings of inclusivity.
Yeah, part of the software, I remember discussing this
years ago,
a decade ago, so it was, you know, it was expensive, so but it was nice to get this grant to implement, especially the schedule, our ability to track what students are taking so that we can build a more efficient schedule, especially with the multiple campuses. You know, we can drill down to the campus, figure out, you know, what campus needs more English or more math, you know, so it just makes us more efficient.
It's funny when you see the tool, like, you can't help but wonder, like, the student that picks, like, I want this faculty member.
Yeah.
You'll also see the opposite, I'm sure, where they pick every faculty member but one or something.
Right, yeah.
It'd be interesting to track that data, too.
Who's not getting picked?
Who's not getting checked here?
We don't want to talk about that.
Very good. In our business, we look at how do you identify with your customers? How do you identify with your how do you keep up with them? What are their preferences? And so when you talk about this with students, what are students doing? How are they purchasing goods and services out there in their daily life? How do they get through? I mean, what they're experiencing in high school, you know, they shouldn't get to Daytona State College and experience something that's less than what they have in any other environment in which they interact. So they're so used to this and an app and, you know, instantly and friction-free. No obstacles, it's very easy, and the ease of use has become kind of primary. You know, I still marvel at the fact that when I go to visit a doctor's office, I have to take a clipboard and fill out a paper document. And it irritates me like crazy. And so, you know, you've created an environment that's keeping up with your students. It's keeping up with their preferences and their demands. And, you know, failing to do that, they're just not going to participate. And so, you know, it's interesting because it's in the private sector. It's across the board. That's what's happening.
And we're excited. I think it's really going to, you know, get us that next level where, sophistication of students, and like you said, meeting students, you know, instant answers that
right.
they can get, where you know, it's almost mimics a conversation with an advisor, where you can, you know, well, I can't take night classes. Okay, let me do that. You know, you don't have to do that now. You just do it right there, and it gives you that right there. What here's what, okay, no night classes, Monday night only, Tuesday, Wednesday. This professor, you know, I heard, and done. And that's in the old days, that's a conversation. It's a lot of back and forth.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were used to that, and you sort of hit the obstacle, you bounce back, you go there, you do this, whatever, you go around, you figure out how to. These days, it seems that it's like you hit that obstacle, you give up.
Right.
You just stop. There's no challenge, there's no whatever. If you make it too difficult, I'm done.
Yeah. Especially some of the populations we serve, we see that in their early time with us, the resilience is not as high. So we want to make sure we don't throw these hurdles
right
early on in the system. So.
Great job.
Yeah, great. Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you.
And then on my end, I can also mute it if need be. So, and then in this space, like we can hear it and stuff, but an audience member won't hear anything until I push.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay. The only reason like we can hear it is because we are set up as producers and inside the live event.
Okay. So I'm good. That's supposed to be off.
Yeah. When you're in the meeting and you close it, just so that you can, in theory, if you need to get back into the meeting to do something.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So that's good.
Yeah.
Good.
And then we have the red line, which lets us know we are sharing.
The rock star.
Oh.